So this is the plan of the talk. So although it is not as informal as it was, for instance, yesterday, but of course I hope that you will ask at least as much as it was discussed yesterday.
Person who asks.
Yes, yes, I am lacking the most. So, after introduction, we'll be just introducing the lattice action. Then we'll discuss renormalization and some z-factors, which can be obtained rather interestingly. Then comes the subject of the phase structure near zero quark mass. This Wilson chiral perturbation theory, the Aoki phase versus first order phase transition, then some numerical simulation results, and using renormalization group improved renormalization group equation, RGE, gauge actions, discussion at the end. These are my collaborators in several, some combinations in different papers. In addition to that, there were also papers by a part of the collaboration that I was not involved, which was about scaling tests with quenched simulations. But this, what I will talk about, will be essentially only on unquenched. So you know that we have to perform the numerical simulation at small quark masses, otherwise it is not what we want. And small means that it has to be close to the physical value, at least as close as one can apply chiral perturbations theory for chiral extrapolation to the physical point, low order, which means practically one loop. Now, this is of course a great challenge for algorithms and computers. However, if we could at some point achieve that, we can even beat the experimental physicists, because we can get more information in principle out of QCD than it is available by experiment, because we can change, for instance, the quark mass. We can also change the other things, but we can change the quark mass. So therefore, and experimentalists cannot. So we can just get out more in principle. Now, in practice, of course, is a good question. Maybe at some point it will be also true in practice. And what I want to say is that using twisted mass Wilson fermions is a promising way to do this. And just to, so to say, actually the summary now is, to say it at the beginning, the advantages of twisted mass lattice QCD is that the numerical simulation is getting faster compared to non-twisted mass Wilson fermions. There are reduced lattice artifacts, a so-called automatic order wave movement, which we shall discuss later. Then one can make operator mixing and renormalization procedures simpler in order forbidding mixing with lower dimensional operators. An interesting thing is that there is an exactly conserved axial vector current, which is of course very useful. These are the advantages. The disadvantage is that there is explicit flavor symmetry breaking, and also parity. Parity is broken, of course, in the continuity. This both parity symmetry breaking and flavor symmetry breaking goes to zero, but at non-zero lattice spacing, we have this symmetry breaking. So this is more or less the summary, but now let us just go step by step. So twisted mass Wilson fermion was, I think, first introduced by Aoki, but he was using it just for studying the phase structure, and seriously taken this approach as an alternative lattice formulation of QCD was proposed by these people, Fezzotti, Grassi, Zink, and Lysam. So this was about 20 years ago, this was about 10 years ago. I'm sorry that the dots were not. So this, I think here you should put beta. I'm sorry, this is not a full list. The dot 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 is.
But I saw that beta actually load the action of the
Even before Aoki?
No, Aoki identified, in my reaction, identified the base structure. He asked, how can it be, in the case of Wilson, that you get the master spion on the lattice without having symmetry? And then he found that there is this other symmetry. The action, however, is the Tao, I think, that's what I remember.
Yes.
Somebody else.
Yes. So thank you. So
it should be
in the dots. really. Yes. So that dots everywhere. Yeah. But nevertheless, I think these people were really taking it seriously. I think this is an important step. And so this was about 20 years ago, 10 years ago, and now even 1 or 2 years ago, these two, Frezzotti Rossi, did even an important. Further important step, and maybe there will be some more important steps in the future. So let us just write down the action in a way that it is not originally written down, but just now. So first, let us consider a doublet, which is which is an unequal mass doublet, so just two quarks with different masses. And let's just call it U quark and D quark, but it could be, of course, any doublet. And the U quark mass is just, let's say, write it like this way, mu plus minus mu minus, and the D quark, mu plus mu minus. So then this is the mass term, yes? Just mu plus minus tau 3 mu minus. This is the mass term. So that's already, that's good. Now, this is the discretization of the naive discretization of the d mu gamma mu of the continuum Dirac. So this we also add. I'm sorry if I am disturbing your. It's getting. I am not very transparent. I thought it will be cold. Sometimes it's really cold, but now it's not so cold. So let's see. Let's try to. This will be a funny intermezzo in the recording. Okay, so this is that, until that is trivial. Now we know that there is then parity. Fermion doubling, and therefore we have to introduce a Wilson term. And so this is the Wilson term, actually. This is the second derivative in this notation. And now, in order not to interfere with the mass, I put it in another direction. This is just another direction in the chiral space. So I take it gamma 5 tau 1, and I multiply the Wilson term. Now, this is just to make it really 0. This is still goes to 0 in the continuum, but if you are at a given will be some more interesting screensaver. Yeah. Yes. So this is just to really make it zero, at non-zero lattice spacing. So this is then the Wilson term, just the critical value of the mu kappa is 1 over 2 kappa. Yes. And this is the Wilson action. This is the Wilson action. So the only difference is that we, in order not to mix, so to say, with the mass, we have put it in a different direction. That's it. Now,
the tau 3 term, the mu minus term, is it necessary? Really?
Well, of course, it could be zero. I don't know what is. If it is a degenerate doublet, it is zero. If it is a non-degenerate doublet, like every doublet in nature is non-degenerate, then of course there is this term. Everybody has this term.
You want to have an explicit necessary thing?
Yes, sure. Since this is what we. This is in physics, so we would like to describe this situation. Yeah. Of course, sorry.
Your notation convention is gamma minus mu is equal to minus gamma mu?
Yes. But that's what it's just. This is, of course, you can write it differently, but.
Yeah, but I just want
to. Yes. Sure. Gamma minus mu is minus gamma mu, yes.
And the shift of kappa critical from an eighth, if that doesn't come into mu plus, it only comes into mu.
Yeah, okay, now that comes here. Of course, it is not necessary. You can just put, let's say, if you either you put it outside and you take any value, or you leave this one inside. It is written here. So that's replaced by any value, which is this value what is here plus something else. And this something else I take outside. And then, of course, this will be the mass term. So now it is getting more complicated.
The shift of critical is all in that one term.
This is kappa critical. And this is the rest, so to say, which is outside.
I'm more used to the notation where the R is 1, not R is
5. R is 1 here. R is 1. R is the Wilson parameter is 1.
Oh, yeah, but you put a gamma 5 in front of it. So.
You twisted it.
Yes. Now you would like to see it in another form. This comes on the next page, next slide.
This should be fine. Okay.
Mike, it comes on the next slide. So I am just introducing it, so to say, that. To show that this is a mass, I mean, this how you should start. Yes, this is a mass, yeah? And then put here something which is non-physical anyway and would like to keep the mass diagonal. But of course, in a conventional notation, which comes on the next page.
Before you do it, the point of writing it this way is to show that twisting and non-degenerate masses are independent things.
Yes. So you can.
It gives you the relative phase it has relative to the normal continuum covariant piece, gamma mu mu. So it tells you exactly the I in the gamma 5 and the tau 1.
Now, this is, of course, chirally symmetric.
Right.
So if I make a chiral transformation, then this can be shifted to this part and vice versa. But this will be invariant. I mean, this comes on the next page. Now, your question.
Another point. Yes, so just to point out, for those who aren't twisted mass aficionados, that this is maximum twist. Right? There's no omega.
You are talking about the next page, transparency. So now we do a chiral transformation, because this is not the usual way how we do, because usually this I gamma 5 is not in front of the Wilson term. So therefore, we just say that, I mean, as I said before, I can perform a chiral transformation of this type on the fields. And then, of course, this I gamma 5 tau 1 will be shifted or just transformed. And so you can put it, for instance, it was before. Here, this was the previous status of the mass term. Then I want to make it first like it is here, but I can do that, and then it looks like something like that. Yes. So the only important point is that the difference is not transforming. You know, tau. If I am doing a tau 1 chiral transformation, the mass difference is invariant. I think this is only important if you have a mass splitting. If you don't have a mass splitting, of course, this is zero. And now comes the conventional notation, what you find in the literature. So first of all, tau 1 and tau 3 are exchanged, but this is, of course, a trivial isospin transformation. And then this is the form what you find in the literature. So now now you have here together the derivative term and the naive derivative term and the Wilson term, which has no tau or I gamma 5, and now it went to this place. So there you have I gamma 5 tau 3, and this is invariant. So that is the same as before. The only difference is just a chiral transformation, which I have chosen. You can find a particular value of omega where you can just write the previous form into this form. And so this is the form what is mainly in the literature, and how it was introduced in the literature.
Okay, so I think, so the mu kappa is the shift of the kappa.
Mu sub kappa is 1 over 2 kappa. It's just a notation for 1 over 2 kappa. Because, so mu kappa is just 1 over 2 kappa, because in this case it is not very.
I don't mean that. Because kappa shifts away from the nape, then mu kappa shifts away from the nape.
From.
That's right. All right.
Yeah.
I always like to call it twisted R rather than twisted mass.
Yeah, that's why I started it. So this was on the first page, yes?
Yeah.
It was twisted R. This was twisted R, and that is the natural physical representation. But nevertheless, in the literature, you find this other representation. So this is then usually called, the previous one is the physical basis, which shows you the physically important features. And this is the twisted basis, where the twist is in the mass. But both are used. And as you say, if you, for instance, put it in the computer, at least us, we are putting it in this way and not in the other way. And the reason is that there, then you have to specify kappa critical. And we would not like to specify kappa critical yet. So here, this is a general form, which is equivalent if you do the chiral transformation. Now, so then, in the continuum limit, of course, this twist on the R or the Wilson term is irrelevant. So everything is getting independent of it. This means that, this angle omega, which was just the rotation, will be an irrelevant variable. So if I put here mu is the twisted mass, mu k is the usual mass, which is 1 over 2 kappa, then in the continuum limit, if I, for instance, fix the quark mass, and now this is one simple way to fixing the quark mass, R0 m pi is 1. Of course, I could take R0 m pi 1.2, and so on. So just fix R0 m pi is a monotonous function of the quark mass. So if I fix R0 m pi, then I fix the quark mass. And if I fix it to 1, then it is a particular quark mass, which is about 1/3 of the strange quark mass, just to remember. So then in the continuum limit, this curve where this R0 m pi is 1 is just a perfect circle. But of course, it is not a perfect circle if you are at non-zero lattice spacing. It is, I don't know, some sort of an egg. So it is certainly not symmetric. So the chiral symmetry means that this, for this thing, is that this is just a circle, and everything is independent. Every physical quantity is the same along the circle. So this is, so to say, the continuum limit. Now, non-zero lattice spacing, the chiral symmetry is broken, and therefore, first of all, this is not a perfect circle. Especially, it is very much not a perfect circle if you are close to the zero mass. And this will be discussed. We shall discuss it just in a minute. So there, here in the vicinity of zero mass, it is strongly distorted. If you are, let's say, this is not a very small quark mass. It is getting more and more like a circle. And especially if you go to the continuum, it is getting more and more like a circle. But this is, first of all, is a very interesting and important tool, because if you are now at some lattice spacing, and then you just, let's say, in principle, measure all your quantities along this circle, this gives you a direct information on the magnitude of lattice artifacts. Because lattice artifacts do depend on omega. And moreover, at least the leading lattice artifacts, and this is the order A improvement thing, the leading lattice artifacts are even known how they depend on omega. And this is the work by Frezzotti and Rossi, that they show. Now, I am not saying that this is a mathematically 100% full proof, but let's say within a renormalized perturbation theory and on the basis of on the semantic local effective Lagrangian, they prove that the leading lattice artifacts are like that for important physical quantities, A times cosine omega. So if you cosine omega is 0 here and here, so if you go here or here, then there are no leading lattice artifacts. That's, of course, also useful outside of these two points, because if you know the dependence of leading lattice artifacts, then of course you can just have different points and then, you know, just look whether it is indeed something like a cosine, and then you can even extrapolate to omega or whatever. So you can just investigate. Now comes something. What comes? Yes. Okay. So this is a circle which comes in the continuum limit. Now, and this leads me to the next important point, because
is anything known about the order a squared dependence on omega?
No. I don't think so. I mean, of course, now this will be presumably quite in detail discussed in the talk by Steve Sharp on Thursday, because this, of course, can be explicitly seen in chiral perturbation theory, in Wilson chiral perturbation theory. One can just calculate, and then one sees how it really goes. I am not sure whether a square, you also see a square there. So in a chiral perturbation theory, you also see how a square is, yes.
Right, but only in some quantities have we gone to high enough order, so I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Okay, I have to think about that.
But I mean, this is about statement about order A. And I think Frezzotti Rossi did not say anything about order A square.
But there are order A corrections, but they're favor violating, so you choose not to look at them. The favor violating.
Yeah.
Things that the non-physical
sure. So the statement is that this is not for every quantity, but you have to choose your quantity properly. But they are the interesting quantities anyway.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah. And yes.
It's garbage,
yes,
which is order A.
This is order A. So there is order A, which is, I mean, garbage in a sense that. But of course, you can study them. But in order to see, yes. For instance, now I don't know. This is jumping. A little bit from here to there, but for instance, due to the flavor symmetry breaking, there is a pi charge pi mass splitting, which is order A. So this you can study.
That's
order A square. Sorry, this order A square.
So
that says something.
Scalar mesons, which are order A, which aren't allowed in the
region. Okay. So there are some things which are anyway non-physical, which go away in the continuum limit. They are order A. But those which are, so to say, interesting, and Frezzotti Rossi make a list of things which belong to the good quantities where the order A correction is behaving like that. Okay, so now let us just go to the. This is an interesting, interesting and very useful application which shows the usefulness of this extra variable omega, which is getting irrelevant in the continuum limit. Therefore, I cannot go into detail. You can find very detailed description of the renormalization procedure in these papers by Frezzotti and so et al. Was, I think, the middle in the list. But I just say that, so to say, that this is, of course, if you are using a mass-independent renormalization scheme, renormalizing at zero mass, then so you introduce some z factors, as usual, on the omega equals zero axis, the normal Wilson axis. Then, since it is just an irrelevant rotation, every chiral multiplet, so you make chiral multiplets out of your composite operators, renormalize it at omega equals zero, and then you just transform it according to the appropriate chiral transformation, and then you get the renormalized operator at any omega without any new renormalization. And therefore, you can use this omega dependence to get out the z factors, that is, some of the z factors. And that is, of course, very important, because you know that getting out the z factor is either you do it in perturbation theory, it is maybe not the best thing to do, but I mean, if you cannot do anything else, then you do it. Or then there are some other methods, but then you have to, you know, this taking some quark, Green's functions at high momenta, you have to go to very small lattice spacing, now comes the next. Yes. And so this is a headache, determining the z factors. So here there is a relatively simple method to determine some of the z factors. So in order to do that, let us consider the vector and axial vector currents, which are just, so let us denote the the physical renormalized currents by hat, V hat and A hat. And these are just the bare currents defined on the chi basis. Then, so as I said, you have to multiply by the z factors, and then there is a rotation, omega. So this is the relation between the renormalized physical vector and axial vector current and the bare currents in the chi basis. Then there are some other forms. There are these some auxiliary angles. And then, so this is the rotation. And then we want to determine this omega v and omega a, which you get out of the vector current or of the axial current. And then, for instance, you can use a Ward identity. The vector current will be conserved in the continuum limit, so this will be zero in the continuum limit. Of course, then we impose it as a zero, or some matrix element. And then out of this, you get that. So you can determine omega v. In the same way, you can determine omega a. That is an even easier method to just take, for instance, this guy and this guy. This has to be zero because this is an axial current, this is a vector current. This is a vector current, this is a pseudoscalar. This is zero in the continuum limit. So we just impose this. This is not even Ward identity, it's just parity conservation. Then we get either, so we just get out omega v and omega a. And out of these relations, we can determine some combination of the z factors. Because in this, for instance, here what is plotted is this omega angle, which we measure numerically, divided by pi as a function of this variable mu kappa. This is this function. These are some data. You are fitting it. This is arc tongue. And then you get out this combination of z factors. Z, okay. If you, this was for z omega v. For omega a, you get out another combination. So you already have two combinations. Now, za can also be easily determined because, as I said before, there is a conserved axial vector current if you go to omega equal pi half. If it is a conserved current, then you have a equals zero, 1. And then, of course, comparing it to the, let's say, on the omega equals 0 axis, you get out ZA. So then we have now 3. Now there is one left, which cannot be determined in this way. This is, so to say, something which is in perturbation theory divergent. This, let's say, for instance, ZP or ZS. So, but other three, which are finite, can be obtained in this relatively easy way without doing almost anything.
But logically, it's similar to the old Ward identity method.
It is something like a Ward identity method. I could have used the Ward identity, but since it was even easier with the parity conservation, so I used the parity conservation. But if you use the Ward identity, you get out the same. So it is something like the Ward identity method.
But in the Ward identity method, you have to use three-point functions.
Yes, yes, and yes.
You somehow got that because you've got something in the action which you bring that down. It's like a three-point function in that sense. So.
Yes, yes, yes. So it is very much related to the Ward identity method.
Straightforward to do.
Is rather straightforward to do, and it's,
kappa critical out.
yes. Yeah, so you can see, these are not fantastic data. These are just, exploring, so they are not very good data. But even with this data, you get out kappa critical. I mean, kappa critical is defined by omega v equal pi half, or omega a equal pi half, which is exactly the same. Due to the relation, or omega equal pi half. So all of the three give exactly the same number, and this is you can get it very, very precisely. I mean, with really good data, I'm sure one can even get one decimal point more. So this is the useful property which.
And can you compare your numbers for the z's with other ones?
No, unfortunately. This was for an action which I shall talk about. Of course, it depends on the action. Your z factors depend on the action. And this was with Wilson fermions and dBw2 cage action. And so of course, nobody did it before, so we could not compare it. But at least it was, not, for instance, which is perhaps not so bad. I mean, this number is not terribly much different from 1. Of course, in the continuum limit, it should be 1.
What do you get to see as a little CP in the end?
No, I don't think so, but I don't know the number by heart. All of them which we have looked at were close to 1. I mean, in this way, about 20% or so. So for this action. So now comes the phase structure which I can more or less skip and leave it to or for.
I have to talk about them. We've heard them in
the Yeah, you already wanted to talk about yesterday. So. Okay, so the first statement. As a consequence of spontaneous chiral symmetry breaking in QCD, there is a singularity zero quark mass. This we already know, I hope. And so even with overlap action, we have a singularity. Even in the continuity, we have a singularity. And of course, for instance, you can see it because if you take a limit quark mass going to zero from the positive side, then you get 1 sign for the condensate. If you take it from the negative side, that you have the opposite sign. So the condensate is always aligned with the quark mass. So therefore, there is a jump in the condensate. This shows that there is a singularity. Now, this singularity structure near zero quark mass can be described by the low-energy chiral Lagrangian, because the pions are dominating at low energy. So therefore, it is quite clear that they will describe this singularity structure. And now, this was first investigated by Steve Sharp and Singleton in this approach, where you include, which was discussed yesterday, include order A and even order A square lattice artifacts in the chiral Lagrangian. Now, so maybe Steve will explain that in the effective potential. So now we are looking at the effective potential. Of course, we have a complicated Lagrangian, but if we put everybody to a constant field, then we get the effective potential. Yes.
So just to give credit where it's due, Mike also did.
I added slightly earlier than them, except there's several things. One, I published in a very obscure place.
So I didn't
know about proceedings. And the other things, I didn't really analyze the A dependence so much, but I did find this.
This form.
Structure for
so the if you, I don't know if he gives me the reference, I could include. Okay. It is in the paper.
It's on the archive, but I really made a mistake by not publishing that in real place.
Yeah. So many things are not published. For instance, Iwasaki action is, everybody is using Iwasaki action. It was never published. I mean, in a real paper. Yeah. Okay. So this is A is a. You just write the sigma as A plus B times tau. So this is the A which appears. So that this is a effective potential. And then you can look for the minima. And what comes out is this picture. So there are essentially 2 possibilities for the vacuum, for the vacuum structure. And this depends on the sign of this term in this. So that is, this is the form. The C1 is essentially the quark mass, and C2 is a constant, or roughly constant, which we don't know. It just depends on the action. This is describing order A square lattice artifacts. If you go to the limit, quark mass is order A square. And now this is what comes out of the analysis. So this is now the normal Wilson mass and twisted mass plane, so the same plane as it was before. And so this is the mu equals zero axis. And one possibility, if this C2 is negative, I always forget. Some of, I think negative. Then, so at one sign, then there is a so-called Aoki phase, which means that this has two endpoints. At these two endpoints, all the three pions are massless. Inside the Aoki phase, the charged are not massless, but the pi zero is massless. So if you go, and there is an expectation value of this famous I gamma 5 tau 3, psi bar psi, yes? Which is non-zero along this line. And so if, in fact, it is also can be considered as a first order phase transition, because if you cross it in this way, then also the expectation value jumps. But of course, if you just look from here, this is a second order phase transition, this is a second order phase transition. And then there is the Aoki phase in between. So this is one possibility. The other opposite possibility, I think, if C2 is negative, is this one, that there is a line, I mean, which is actually in this approximation exactly orthogonal to the axis, to the M0 axis. And then if you go along M0, then you see a first order phase transition, first of all. There is no flavor symmetry breaking, but there is a minimum pion mass. So you cannot go to zero pion mass. The zero pion mass is, so to say, somewhere on the second, in the metastable region. So that is a first order phase transition, which means that many things are jumping. For instance, the Plaquette expectation values have a jump and a non-zero jump. I shall show data. The quark mass has a jump. So everybody almost has a jump.
The condensate, yes. Flip sign. Not that you can see that so easily.
Yes, yes, yes. The condensate also flip sign.
Supposed to flip the sign. Yes. Physically.
Yes. Right. So this is always there. But here also, of course, as you say, numerically, maybe it's not so easy to see, but we did not for looking for that. But it jumps also here.
Zero quark mass is not a surprise.
No. This is everywhere.
But I mean, so this is just the lattice rounds off the singularity in one of two ways. Either it maintains this jump from plus one to minus one with the condensate, or
the condensate expectation. Oh, okay.
Yes.
There's no infinite correlation then. So the latter example, you analyze this coming logically, thinking about how do we make the pion mass zero, how could that be? In the latter case, the bottom case, it never is zero.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and except for this endpoint where the pi zero is zero. But
right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So here, along the usual Wilson mass line, there is no, there is a minimum pion mass.
Then how do you define a quark mass at mu equals zero? There's none. Basically, it's not possible. What do you mean?
Yes,
how do you define where this certain point is?
Maybe with your point, the longer the area is your working on, you cannot define part time. Basically, there is no correlation.
I am defining the quark mass in this way. This is the so-called PCAC quark mass. So I just take the PCAC relation. Oh, what comes? Need some care from time to time. Yes. Okay. So sorry. What was? So this is our definition, or at least one possible definition of quark mass. Yes. This will not be zero. It also has a minimum.
Quark mass definition doesn't have much correlation with M.
Of course it has, just a different definition. There is it is just a z factor among them. So the two are related by a z factor. So the ratio of this to the... Yes, there is, of course. In M0, there is a... So if you want... So you define the renormalized quark mass, which is this M0 minus... This is, and then you multiply it by z factor, some z factor. And this also has a z factor, of course. It is another z factor. But of course, the ratio of two is just the ratio of the two z factors. So this is a completely normal definition.
And the mu equals zero line, you can still define quark quark mechanism.
Ah, sure, sure, sure.
But the pion spectrum doesn't have.
It is not zero. So also this quark mass will not vanish. This also will have a minimum. Not only the pion mass will have a minimum, but also this, the quark mass will have a minimum.
Non-zero
minimum. Yes, thank you. Because it is, you know, just jumping from a positive value to a negative value when you cross this first to the first solution.
Then does the normal common sense of the whole physics of defining quark mass or fails?
What do you mean by that?
There is no chiral in that sense.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not chiral. I already told you this many times, but let me repeat. So to say, this is of course looks terrible, and it is terrible, really terrible thing. But nevertheless, I must say that even with staggered fermions, you have a first order phase transition at zero quark mass. Maybe you did not realize it before. Now, where I mean, I hope that you agree. So if you now take any nf equal 4, you know, no square root, nothing, just four flavors staggered. Now this is the quark mass. And now these are the pseudoscalar mass squared. There is one guy which is a good guy, which goes to 0. This is the ghost of pion. Then there are other 14, I think, altogether. So altogether there are 15, which are non-zero. Now how this, you know, how will this be continued to the negative side? This will be continued like that. So there is a singularity at zero quark mass.
That's the normal QCD effect also.
No.
QCD,
no.
Pion mass.
No, I am saying.
Supposed to behave like that. So. Stay away from me and behave.
No, way. I think. Sorry, this is the normal behavior.
Right.
This is the abnormal behavior.
Of course, yes. But the Goldstone mode is supposed to behave.
Ah, sure, sure, sure. So,
so it's not a problem. But here, how do you.
I don't know why you say that there is not a problem.
Right.
I mean, you can.
Harold's already bringing it comes to the street, so side by side, without any mastery, it's still. It's a degeneracy, but it's a discrete jump. It jumps from one to the other. It's no longer continuous.
So this is very similar. This is exactly the same as what happens with the pions. I'm sorry again. It is exactly what happens with the Wilson pions. Exactly the same. What happens with this other 14 of the staggered pions. You are right, the staggered has an advantage that there is one good guy, which really behaves like in continuum. So this is the advantage of the staggered.
But it could have been that those other guys were actually lighter, in which case we could have...
Yeah, okay, yeah, yes, yes. So, of course, you could even have an Aoki phase, which is, I mean, according to recent papers by Obin or Aben or Bomban.
Yeah. Well, we talked about it now.
Yes, so it is, I mean, if you would... You know, if some of these guys, for instance, this guy, instead of doing that, would do this, could, if you choose the parameters properly or improperly, then it behaves like that. So you have an Aoki phase. So there is even the Aoki phase. So I think in that sense, there is quite a lot of similarity between staggered and Wilson, but there are also differences. I don't want to pretend that there are no differences.
I mean, I just, you know, it's my wine bottle picture is confusing. I think it's really the simplest way to do it.
Yeah, yes.
A wine bottle with a carol in it, and with the lattice string is warping.
Yes.
And so, I've drawn these pictures on the board.
Yes, you were drawing it already, I think, on the first week. So
it's
a very nice geometric way to understand how the minimum of this Mexican hat is, if you are introducing a chiral symmetry breaking term, is just tilted, and then will be you can see how it is Aoki phase or. Yes, 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 exactly.
You do find this confusing.
Do I?
Well, you told me that.
Maybe I changed my mind.
Okay.
What happens with the eigenvalues of this Dirac operator?
this idea. Thank you very much. I forgot to say that. Just go back to the first page. I just forgot to say. So now you take this form. And this is one advantage of writing it like this. You see what is what you have. You have a real mass. Yeah. This is anti-Hermitian. This is, of course, Hermitian. This is anti-Hermitian. This is anti-Hermitian. So you have a mass plus anti-Hermitian, exactly like in the staggered case. So that's, of course, actually the original motivation why these people were introducing this, because you know that there are these very small eigenvalues if you are not working with twisted mass quarks. But if you are working with twisted mass quarks, then you have mass plus anti-symmetric. So you have exactly the same anti-Hermitian, exactly the same type of spectrum as in the case of staggered. So that is one big advantage, and so to say. Was that not your question? In the phase structure, in the phase. So this is, of course, you can define other quark matrices. This is one which is just this, you know, something like there is a mass, and then this is, so to say, this. You can. Now, in the first order transition, what happened in the first order transition? So, okay, I cannot say it very so fast. We were actually investigating this. Don't have pictures here, but we have investigated the small eigenvalues, but not of this matrix. But okay, you can just, I mean, this is just multiplied with something. You have something which has a complex eigenvalue, so which is actually the other, the chi basis. And it is very interesting what happens. I mean, we never expect it to happen. So now this is a non-Hermitian matrix. And so what is here again? This is lambda, complex lambda. So real lambda, imaginary lambda. So what is, so to say, before the phase transition is something like that. So you have a sort of a determinant is doesn't allow that that the yes, which one is it here? Yes. So this is what happens. You can find it some pictures in our paper, but I did not put it here now. So there is, so to say, there is more or less a region, relatively well-defined region, where the eigenvalues are, and this is what is before the phase transition. Now, what is the now? What would you expect after? I mean, we did not know. I'm just looking. It's very funny thing happens. It's getting like that. You know, I mean, of course. So there will be a gap opening up. So this is positive quark mass. This is negative quark mass. When you are going to the other side. So there is a, so this is then where you see the eigenvalues, and there is a gap. I don't know why is it so.
You didn't look at the eigenstates?
No, not yet. Would be, yes, good idea. We did not do. So it is a funny thing happens. So to say, there will be a some gap opening up. If you go, this is for mu zero. Now this actually, this is mu equals zero, yes. Now if you just do mu unequal zero, then there will be a. So this guy here gets a hole also. This is, so to say, the hole is only there for which is a mathematically exact hole. This is not an exact, not a 100% exact hole. These are a little bit fluctuating. But this is an exact hole, so there is a low, exact lower limit. So this is for mu unequal zero, unequal zero. So this is the picture. We don't really understand it.
But the reason I'm asking is that an effective Lagrangian does anything, you know, allows any sort of parameters to be put in. We have only one class of accept the possibility that the electron is realized by this, like, this kind of connection. So
mm-hmm.
you know, if you want to avoid it or something, understanding it from that point of view, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it helps you navigate mm-hmm. that landscape of effective Lagrangians.
Yes, yes. So we just did this one, and until now did well, just stopping. We were just saying that it is not easy to understand why is it like that, but we did not do anything. But it would be interesting to pursue this. So now
there might be some formula which gives you the parameters and effective Lagrangian terms
of the spectra parameters.
Psi,
of course.
Complex.
Psi, psi, of course, you can get out of the eigenvalue density. Yes, yes. So it maybe this is perhaps this is not the best. You know, you can define several different quark matrices,
right.
And maybe
absolutely.
This is not the proper one. Maybe one should look for the Hermitian one or whatever, I don't know.
Well, it's not possible that you measure it's a four bilinear as a character.
Yes. So it is, it would be nice to connect, so to say, this type of information to the effective, you know, psi by psi, for instance,
yeah.
Which is an important parameter in the effective theory.
But you're doing the some phenomenology, numerical phenomenology.
You know, the reason why we did that
mm-hmm.
is that, of course, this is a relatively bad thing, you have having this minimal
absolutely.
Pion mass, especially if this minimal pion mass is 500 MeV.
Right.
So therefore...
also about these little stars which are critical and have a tendency to radiate connections.
Yeah.
Unnatural.
Yes, so to say, this is that one.
No.
This one?
Yes, that little guy of this
Yes. So it's. But so to say, coming back to the motivation why we were looking that, so we saw that it has to do something with the small eigenvalue distribution because
right.
that's presumably what makes this, you know, what else. And therefore we went to the DBW2 action, which is known to suppress this very small eigenvalues. And indeed, the minimum, I mean, this is coming in the next pages again. But I mean, what comes out that indeed with DBW2 action, the minimum pion mass is much smaller,
mm-hmm.
which is comfortably small already at rough lattice spacing. But interestingly enough, the picture qualitatively remains the same. There are some little changes that, for instance, this is a little bit more straight here or something, a better defined boundary. But I mean, the qualitative, if you just look, you cannot tell which one is Plaquette action, which one is a DBW2 action. So it is not, at least not in this picture. You cannot see the reason. But nevertheless, the result is OK. The result is that the minimum pion mass is going down.
In the Wilson case, it is more the structure of the state.
State, maybe we have to look at the state. Yeah,
localized.
It could be that you know that there are which are the very local state. Maybe the local states are absent. So the very
right.
small, this which we don't
that's
like to say. Yes,
that
yes,
it
does. So to say that. So there are so to say more physical small eigenvalues which stay and they are distributed similarly, but the very small ones are maybe
are
suppressed. Yes, so yes, you are right. So this is a good idea to investigate also the...
Actually, I don't know many works in other fields which have looked at the complex, truly complex
Hamiltonian. Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
I don't know.
This can be done. I mean, this, you know, Arnoldi is the proper algorithm. So it can be done. Can be done. And of course, you can just, let's say, study the lowest 100 or lowest 50 or whatever eigenvalues,
yeah,
not all of them, but this is enough. This is enough. Okay, so coming back, so we're getting good. So before going to the numerical data, so there are this possibility, Aoki phase, this possibility. Of course, there is something in between, which is very interesting, which is just like what you would like to have in the continuum. And indeed, if you would have, you know, if this would correspond to C2 equals 0, this would be just exactly like in the continuum. The effective potential would be exactly chiral symmetric, which is interesting.
But you need to go to higher order.
C4, C3.
Yes. Maybe I discuss it a little bit later. But now let's show you some numerical data. So that is this collaboration. We were first studying Wilson quarks with Wilson plaquette action. And then, showing this large value of the minimum pion mass, we took the DBW2 action. Now, this is what you see. So you, so to say, how you see the first order phase transition, you just come from one side. This is, I think, just the plaquette, yeah? Plaquette expectation. You will see other things. But this is the plaquette expectation where you come from one side, you get a very stable value. You come from the other side, you get another very stable value. And, okay, 12 cube lattice, 16 cube lattice.
Do you ever see a tunneling?
Yes. If your algorithm is good enough. Now, this was observed earlier. I think the first observation was in 94. And this was presumably the moment when the Mir collaboration decided to abandon Wilson quarks, I guess.
This is probably not inaccurate.
Then it was also seen by the JLC, the QCD collaboration. They, of course, all of these papers are different combination of actions. So, but at least in the case of what we have investigated, it is quite clear that this is indeed the first order phase transition. So here you can see, for instance, this is the pion mass. Now, I mean, not very precise data. It has these points are in the metastable situation. This is the stable situation, I like that, and this is a very high pion mass. Now, what you see in the case of a quark mass, this is the PCSE quark mass. So here it is zero. So you have it, the positive values, the negative values, but there is an overlapping region where you have two values. So this is, you know, where there are two phases. In fact, the phase transition is somewhere in between, but if you can go to the metastable phase. So this is just really what we expect. So to say, the quark mass jumping from positive to negative or negative to positive. Now, therefore, as I said, we took the DBW2 action, which is just having, in addition to the plaquette, there is this rectangular contribution, 1/2, and different coefficients. This is DBW2, this is Iwasaki, this is three-level Szymanczyk. Now, these things are getting better if you do that, because this is now the pion mass at, there is no, already at this very relatively small twisted mass, 0.01, there is no metastability anymore. Of course, there is still a minimum pion mass, which is due to mu. So this is already above the phase transition. At mu equal 0.01, we are already above the phase transition. There is no jump. But still, there is a minimum because of the mu. Now, if the previous picture, which was this one, so to say, the jump of the quark mass is getting now, I mean, there is no jump, practically. So this is from up, from down. There is a little bit of shift in it, so there is a little crossover, but there is no jump. So to say, the quark mass is more or less depending linearly on this variable mu k.
What's the magic of DBW2?
Magic? We don't know. I mean, this is, so to say, the general motivation is that making the gauge field smoother, it is actually, I mean, the plaquette value is getting, instead of 0.52, is getting 0.61 or something that is much, much higher. So just even the plaquette value, so all the gauge field is getting much smoother. And these bad, very localized, small eigenvalues will be suppressed.
Right. But, and so the previous figures, the trouble came from those small instantons, basically?
Because presumably, yes.
So what does it do? Is it wipes out all the small instantons?
Yeah, presumably, yes. But, I mean, we did not, we were looking just for this. We saw it's good, it's working. Here, we looked at the eigenvalues. They did not show very dramatic change, but Herbert is right. We should maybe look at the eigenfunction. So presumably, the reason is suppressing the small dislocations, yes.
It's a very impressive change.
It's a big change. So you will see. So what is it here? Now if you go to mu equals zero, this was to compare with the Paquette action. We were taking in both cases mu equal 0.01 and at the same lattice spacing. Now if we go to mu equals zero, you still see a first order phase transition. So there is even in the case of a DBW2 action, there is a first order phase transition, but it is much shorter. And the minimum pion mass at vanishing value is, here you can see, I mean, this is, now you have to say, it is 250 if you calculate in physical units. So
250 MeV.
At zero, which is, now you have to look at the other parameters. So this is a relatively coarse lattice, and rather coarse lattice. And of course, the expectation is, according to Kreutz-Sharp singleton, is that the minimum pion mass is going down like A. So if I go, let's say, to half of this value A, then I get to physical pion mass even. So this is 0.18 Fermi. So at 0.18 Fermi, I have a minimum pion mass of about 250 MeV. So if I take my lattice spacing half of it, which is 0.09 Fermi, then it will be already below the physical pion mass. So that's good enough.
The different slopes on the left and the right, I guess those are higher order lattice.
The different slopes. So there is a. So this is the different slopes. I think so. What is actually happening is that the effective value of the lattice spacing, which means that R0, is different on the two sides. Here, so what I was telling is was R0 divided by A, which is our scale, the Zomer scale, is now in this case 2.7 in the positive quark mass phase and 3.6 or 3.5 in the negative quark mass phase.
You didn't change the number of your simulation.
So to say, R0 is jumping in the same way as the Plaquette is jumping.
This goes beyond what we explained just by that C2 coefficient.
Well, it is, you know. This is in lattice. This is QCD, and
R0 is not chiral. I mean, it's
yes. R0 is not in. So R0, you know, if you divide by, so you know, this is plotted here as a function of this mu. One has to renormalize it in a sense such that
the simple chiral Lagrangian approach would just C2 would have them have the same slope. But there are additional corrections which.
Mike, I'm not sure whether you see the slope at all in the chiral Lagrangian.
Oh, sure.
Because this is a lattice. This is QCD. There's no. You have to transform this to do the chiral theory. So you think it is.
It's not to go to higher order, but it's surprisingly big. So it's.
Yes. So the difference between R0 from positive and negative is quite big.
Not so much in the pion mass, but you see a little bit.
Yeah. I think there is also, this slope is smaller than this slope. If I think the ratio is presumably close to one. So to say it, this, roughly speaking, m pi square is proportional to mq. So I think that there is a similar difference also here, but maybe you cannot see it.
How one can interpret the overlap region, the quarkness, if I look at it?
Okay, so this is of course in finite lattice and finite statistics. Need some personal. Yes. So, in fact, this is a finite statistic, finite volume. So, if you go to infinite statistics, infinite volume, there will be a line like that. Somewhere in the middle, there will be. Just, yes, this is a first order phase transition in finite volume, finite statistics. Yeah. So there will be actually a jump and no metastability with infinite statistics. So therefore, you just have a jump, and you have no two values. The two value is just the artifact of having small statistics in small volume. I mean, actually, small statistics is more important. So that you don't have the...
This is the signal for first order phase shift.
Yes, yes. So that is, you know, everybody who looked any time in his life first order phase transition, like some people in the audience, it looks always like this. If you do it on a lattice.
For certain region, the quark method has two...
No, it is just the effect of not infinite statistics. If you... Yes, so, you know, there are two minima. And one of the minimum is a little bit below the other. So this is the absolute minimum. I mean, except for one point where they are exactly equal. This is where actually the first order phase transition happens. If you go a little bit away from it, then there is always one absolute minimum, which is the true minimum, which gives you one value. But if you do it, you know, with finer statistics, your lattice, if it is this little difference, you will not really find the absolute minimum. You can take this one or this one. In order to really have defined the real minimum, you have to have infinite statistics, very high statistics, which we don't have. So there is always one value, no two values. This is just a statistics effect. Yes?
I just wonder, so when you were running, you were just doing the run once.
Yes.
Yes. Way,
yeah.
So yes.
So it is, you know, we take this lattice, then out of this lattice, we continue right. this lattice.
Yeah.
And so on. And of course, next it will, I mean, if you go even further, it goes to the other side. But that is a region where, so to say, stays metastable. Yes?
Just to think about the numbers, I mean, it's 250 MeV. It's exactly what you'd expect. It's supposed to be A lambda QCD.
So that's good enough, so to say. That's good. That is the natural value.
Exactly.
Yes, thank you.
One over A is about
this is, so I, yes.
So, in fact, compared to staggered, where if you half a lattice spacing, this corresponding number is about twice as big, it's exactly the factor of two differences.
So mean the factor of two in the lattice spacing. Yeah. Of course, I don't know what would happen. I was asking in the first week or second week why people, the staggered people, are not using DBW2 action. And the answer was, I think, that we already started with this action. We don't want to change the action, and which is a good answer, yes. I mean, if you do already 3 years the same action, then you have to really have a very, very good motivation to change the action. So therefore, it could be, however, that if you would take DBW2 action with, or whatever action which makes the gauge feel smoother with staggered, perhaps still it would be better. I don't know. I'm just saying that it depends on the combination of the action. Sure, yes. Yes, okay. So and therefore, since there are critics, which I will maybe summarize, we also do now for the moment, we also do semantic three-level improved in order to see the dependence on this parameter C1. And if it is good enough, then of course the semantic action would have an advantage because it has a much better convergent perturbative series, presumably, you know, lattice perturbation series. So therefore, I think the serious critics on the DBW2 action is something like a Blitz. Is that it has a very large lambda parameter. So the lambda parameter is, I don't know, 100 times as much as the lambda ms bar, which shows most probably that and there are examples for that the even if you improve your whatever boost or whatever you do with your lattice perturbation theory, it will not give you a good Z factor, for instance, if you just do one loop. So that is, of course, a disadvantage. I think this is the one serious disadvantage which I recognize. There are some other rumors, you know, which I don't really believe, but I mean, it could be. Somehow this action, many people say that this is, so to say, over-improved in a sense. In a sense, it is too much suppressing something which is maybe not the optimum. That so I maybe Iwasaki action would be the optimum, or even Szymanczyk action would be the minimum. So this we don't know. Of course, it is of course very boring now to explore all these parameters, and it takes a long time. So I'm not sure that we will continue, but at least the Szymanczyk action we shall do. Yes.
If I look at the curves, curvatures, the right-hand side, the parts doesn't have much of a data, so I don't know.
Yeah, sure. You would like to have more data. It comes. This is a first exploratory study, so of course you would like to have many data here and much more statistics and higher lattice.
I look at it has a huge curvature.
I mean, you should not take this. Although we were doing this, but nevertheless, you should not take all these error bars. And I mean, this is, relatively short runs because you don't want to spend, and this is not the primary goal of the numerical simulation, to find out exactly now whether this point is exactly here or maybe just the error is underestimated or whatever.
But why even the slope itself is dramatically different?
We were discussing. That R0 is different in the two, so to say, the effective lattice spacing seems to be different.
Why is it so much different?
Okay, now you can ask, so there is a jump in the plaquette. The jump in the plaquette can be explained by mixing, because the plaquette has the same quantum numbers as psi by psi, so it can mix with psi by psi. And if there is a non-zero twisted mass, it can also mix with psi bar gamma phi psi. And so if, there is a mixing between the plaquette, average plaquette, and psi bar psi, which is jumping, so there is the jump of psi bar psi is transformed via mixing to the jump of the plaquette. And the jump of the plaquette implies a jump in R0. So that is, which is not surprising. It is, so to say, understood that this can be so. This can be like that. So it's nothing special. But it is a relatively large effect. So the slope, as we discussed before, the slope is rather different, and this means also R0 is rather different on the two sides.
And this phenomena doesn't exist in the continuum. This is a new phenomena of the DBW5.
So in a continuum, of course, you would have one straight line.
Right.
Yes.
This is a complete lattice artifact.
This is a lattice artifact, yes.
Yes.
Absolutely, 100% complete, total lattice artifact.
Thinking about it some more, this slope is going to have this A cosine omega in it, and on one side, on one side, the other side, on the other.
Yes. So, thank you.
So, you don't know you're at 90 degrees here. So you're not essentially at zero or.
So it jump also omega. That's very good remark. So also even omega. So not only whatever quark mass and so on, but also omega is jumping. So that is, so to say, the omega equal pi half is gone. It's got out.
Really waste your time. Do a series of simulations of different omegas and see the slope continuously go from one to the other.
Yes, but.
I was kind of hidden in this earlier graph where radio was at non-zero, which it didn't go to zero.
Right.
But of course, if you
interpolate between these two.
You want to avoid the transition.
Yes, now if you remember my first figure, this is when you are above the phase transition. This is exactly DBW2 data. So this is now we are above the phase transition. There is no phase transition anymore. And therefore, this is a nice, there is no jump here.
And so to say. Something similar, smoothly go across, presumably, in this case as well.
Yes. And also. So to say, this is, if you cross the phase transition, there is a jump. This is, omega v divided by pi. This is the angle. Of course, you can put all the other quantities. Yes. I also had, now maybe if you want to have lunch at some point, then, yes. But I'm almost at the end. So you are right. So to say, once you cross the phase transition, practically every quantity is jumping from one value to the other. If you are above, then it is a smooth curve. Eventually, there is a crossover if you are, so to say, it's a continuation of the first order phase transition. Usually, there is a crossover, so there is a fast change, but it is continuous.
here the difference in the slopes in the left one, there are enough points.
This was by chance. So this is, so to say, this is exactly the corresponding the situation when there are no face transition. So this is your favorite picture, so to say. No lattice artifacts at all. It is completely straight and within errors. So, I mean, of course, it means that it's better to go avoid the phase transition, to take such a high value of the twisted mass that you are not disturbed by the phase transition. So this is one situation there. And the other one where we had mu equals zero, which is already bad in a sense, because then you are just hitting the first sort of phase transition. So what was this? Okay, and you can skip this one. Okay, so now there were some previous papers on the Aoki phase, which were there were some papers in the quenched approximation, but now we forget about quenched approximation. Nobody is interested in quenched approximation anymore. So just take the unquenched data. There were some unquenched data by, I am sure, also Bitar, but more recently, was an investigation by people in Humboldt University, Müller-Proisker et al., and they were looking at the Aoki phase at very small beta. So at very small beta, they have found the Aoki phase, which was, however, shrinking, and at some point they were losing the Aoki phase, numerically losing, which means this was at beta equal 4.3. It's a very small beta value. Now, they said, okay, I mean, we don't see it numerically. Maybe it is just very, very thin. Yeah. Therefore, we don't see. Now, on the other hand, so this was a very small beta value. If we go to larger beta value, beta equal 5.3, for instance, which we were recently exploring, then we find the first sort of phase transition. So there is a change. First, there was an Aoki phase, and that is how it looks. So this is now a three-dimensional plot. This is beta. This is mu, which is like that. And this is kappa. So if you teach lattice QCD, you are just drawing beta and kappa. Yes? This is there is a critical line. So this is, I think, this is the critic. This should be the, at least here, this is the critical line. Now, if you have a Aoki phase, then you have something, you know, the Aoki phase in this plane, mu equals zero. Then at some point it changes, and there will be a first sort of phase transition which is in the other plane, you know, perpendicular. So that's it. Somehow it seems that first there is some magic point here where it changes. Of course, it should not change if it would be absolutely asymptotic according to the sharp singlet homogeneity, because in this model, C2 is at least a slowly varying function of G, but not such a dramatic change. But there are also higher order terms and so on. So to say, the effective value of C2 changes sign. And now, of course, you can ask whether maybe there was a workshop in Tsukuba a few months ago. And there was Aoki and especially Ukawa talking about this. And I mean, he was suggesting, because they like, of course, obviously, Aoki phase very much. So they were then suggesting, I mean, not in this picture, but somehow suggesting that, so to say, there will be another change. Again, there will be some Aoki phase. Then again, maybe another change. It will be first sort of phase. You know, just who knows? So this was, there was a picture by, I think you can even find it on the web. So that's, of course, not excluded, that this C2 is, you know, far from being asymptotic, and it changes again. So maybe there will be another Aoki phase, or who knows. Now,
he's unhappy with the lack of Aoki phase, is that
true? I am not so unhappy, but I mean, whatever. Okay, so now these are some preliminary, this is my almost final slide. So, there are some ongoing numerical work which is not yet finished. So, therefore, what is shown in this slide is very preliminary, but nevertheless, I show you some that. So, we are working This is not finished, so you should not quote anything. But so first of all, we were looking what happens as a function of beta. Whether indeed, so to say, maybe it changes against sign, so what is the behavior of this minimum pion mass? Now it turns out that this more or less behaves like, so this is beta equal to 5.1, 5.2, 5.3. Now we also roughly speaking, scaled the values of mu, so also the volume. And now you can see that it goes down. Now, I mean, actually, it goes a little bit slower down. First of all, the numbers are not very precise. And secondly, they are not really going as fast as the lattice spacing, a little bit slower. But I mean, roughly speaking, and with the errors. So at least in this region, it looks like indeed now stars, the asymptotics, so to say. From now on, there is only first order phase transition, no other big changes. But of course, you can say now what happens at beta equals 7, I don't know. But at least in this range, here the lattice spacing is 0.13 Fermi, so it's getting more interesting. Yeah. Or maybe 0.12, I don't know exactly. So that's one thing. This was the Plaquette action. The dBW2 action, that is what I already told you before. So this is the I think, more or less published. So if you go to mu unequal 0, there will be no phase transition, so there will be some smooth behavior, but due to the non-zero twisted mass, there will be a minimum. And this is the minimum what we have as a consequence of the first order phase transition. So you should compare this line with this line. So this line with this line, yes, because this is roughly the same lattice spacing and the same mu. So it is not, you should not compare with this one. So it is not even a factor of 2. But nevertheless, 320 is already quite okay. And one could go below that if just lowering mu. So because we are measuring another point where presumably this will be smaller.
Oh.
It is just, you know, yes, this is a point which is already there, and there should be another point which is presumably will be something like 2.90 or something. Yeah.
Closer to the actual.
It's just closing to the minimum, yes.
Mu, it should still work.
Now, this is now at fixed mu. Even at fixed mu is still not the point with the smallest.
It's not. Oh, because you have very kappa.
It's just, right. You know, you have to vary kappa. And this is not at the minimum yet. Good. Now this is maybe also interesting. There is very preliminary. So therefore, I have plot with green, so you don't really see it. But so this is now the pi on decay constant f pi. And this is now, we would like to investigate scaling. Because some people say that dBW2 has a bad scaling. And it is true for some quantities. So now this is the 12 cube lattice, the green points, which is about 0.18 Fermi again, and the 16 cube lattice, which is about 0.13 Fermi. And now you can. So it should be the same, should be at the end, should be the same curve.
What is this, the ratio of?
Ratio of what?
What is
you want to know everything. Okay, in order, you know, we have to compare two beta values, and therefore, since we don't know the z factor yet, I mean, we could have the z factor, but we don't have yet. So therefore, we take ratios, and the ratio, so what is actually plotted is this R1F. Is f pi any quark mass, which is sigma is mq divided by mq1, and f pi at m, so sigma equal 1, which means m Q1. And this MQ1 is defined, sorry, it's not yet finished. It is defined as the value, in this case, where R0 M pi is 1. So, you know, as I said before, R0 M pi 1 defines a well-defined quark mass. And I divide by this value in order to get rid of the z factor. And this is, of course, should be the same at nv beta if there are no lattice artifacts. So this should be one curve. Now, these points here are not ready. They are the easier point. Now, this is about one. This is where this R0 mpi is 1, which is about 1/3 of the Sage quark mass. This is the physical quark mass you see here. So we are actually not so far away. Yes? And in fact, yes?
I think I can make some sense out of it. That when you say about physics out of this picture of beta, mu, and 1 over kappa, 2 kappa, or quark mass, the 3-parameter space, basically, you are extrapolating mu equals 0.
No, this is no extrapolation. This is at mu equals 0, actually. I mean, we shall do other things. But
that's the continuum limit. Mu equals 0, and you want to go to quark mass equals 0, but at the same time, A equals 0 limit. But what you can claim, I believe, is if you take A equals 0 limit first, then after that, if you take the Cairo limit, that basically this might work. Is it correct?
I am
so
not sure.
The limit is guaranteed that the pion, the non, the pion gap basically, pion mass gap disappears.
Okay, now I understand your question. So to say, this the now that is, you know, this curve you cannot, if you are at a finite beta, non-zero lattice spacing, you cannot go beyond some point. There is a minimum in the quark. This is the quark mass. Yes. There is a minimum. Actually, this is more or less at the minimum. So this is at this value of beta, this is more or less the minimal pion mass we can do. And therefore, we are not going to the physical point.
That's right. So
but, if we go to a higher beta, for instance, with this purple or whatever violet points, then the minimum pion mass will already be smaller, because this is a factor of 3/4. The scale ratio. So then it would be a little bit below. If we would go to a factor 2 smaller lattice spacing than the present one, then we could reach this point. So to say, we can, the physical point, which means that at a given beta there is a minimum, but of course this minimum is going to zero, so at some point we reach the physical value. Then I think we can forget the rest.
That's essentially the equal zero limit, this minimum pion mass, what you're pointing out, you expect it to go to zero.
Yes. Exactly.
So that's the physical point you want to do.
No, the physical point is here. And if I take now, instead of 0.18, I would take 0.07 or 0.06 for me. Then I would have a point here. And then I would stop. I would say, I am not interested in the 0 point. Yeah, that is a minimum.
Is there any kind of limit you can take?
No.
So,
yes.
In order to make sense, in order to go to the kind of limit, probably. The only way is the first A equals 0 limit extrapolation.
Yes, now I would be very much content of going to the physical value of the pion mass, which I can do if I take the lattice spacing 0.06 Fermi. And then, I mean, I'm not interested in the chiral limit.
Right, and also the physical point is B equals 0.
You remember this circle. There is a circle corresponding to the physical quark mass. So I want to go to this circle. I'm not closer to the origin, because who is interested in the chiral limit?
Me. I'm interested.
Okay, of course, this was a joke, but I mean, I am just very happy to go to the physical point. And this can be done with, so now this is already almost my conclusion, that with present computer time, these were points which were done on a small cluster. So we could, you know, QCDOC could easily go to the physical point. Easily. No problem.
Here you're not showing us any twisted simulation. This is
unfair. Yes, because it is not ready. But we are doing. I mean, I hope that we have a meeting in March. And I hope that until this meeting we have some. So I tell you what are running. So there is again this. Yes. is secret anyway. So so there are these, I don't know, 4 points. Yes, what I am showing. And then there are some 5 points here. This is mu equal 0.01 at 1 kappa and mu equal 0.01 at 1 beta and 0.75. So this is again scaled. 5 points, 2, 3, 4, 5 running. And so hopefully it will be something until, let's say, in a month.
But then eventually you want to.
Then somebody wants, I mean, I can tell you who wants what. I mean, for instance, people say, now, okay, we have these configurations. Why don't we do valence quarks, which are lighter? And some people say maybe the best thing to do is with overlap. So I don't know. So of course, then you can go with the valence quark easily to even smaller. And of course, at some point, one could also say, why don't we go to smaller mu even? Unfortunately, we have an upper limit on the computer time, so.
You simultaneously have the 5 values of mu?
No, I mean simultaneously, but in different runs. So they are not related to each other. No, the same machine, but different processors. Different processors. It's the same machine. No, I mean, the machine is big enough. Unfortunately, I mean, this is the Jülich machine, which is a IBM Regatta, which has something like, I don't know, 45 teraflops. But unfortunately, it is used not only by lattice gauge theory. So we of course, we had a big fight to get some a little bit more. I can even tell you how much we have, but if you are interested. I mean, this is a big machine, but we unfortunately, we don't have the big machine for ourselves. So I don't know. That's it. Now, there will be some up and next at some point. I just read that there is some prototype is coming soon. But so maybe we have a little bit more computer time. But for the moment, this is the limitation. Ah, it is getting now interesting.
Oh, that's what you want. It was just going around.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, so this is just very fast. This is f pi. This is, I mean, this doesn't, I mean, the curves are continuum chiral perturbation theory. So obviously there is some order a squared. Here you can see that this is m pi squared divided by the quark mass. This should be, well, obviously there are some order a squared effects there. Okay, conclusion. They are, the light dynamical quark simulations are feasible. I would even go as far that with present machines, existing machines, one could do physical quark mass in large volume. This is an approximate formula for the cost, which is in, now you tell your favorite quantity, you define the integrated autocorrelation, and this is the number of floating point operations you get for one sweep. A relatively big number, but 1 teraflop is 10 to the 19, 3 times 10 to 19, so still some.
What's omega?
Sorry?
Omega.
From its capital omega.
Omega, sorry, this is the number of lattice points.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So only like 1 over n.
Yes. This is definitely established within for a fixed beta value what we have. And of course, I cannot guarantee that it will be also true at beta equal, I don't know, but this fixed beta value is definitely only the first power. Then, of course, you need, so it's getting more and more difficult, but that's life. Okay, the phase structure in zero quark mass can be influenced by changing the gauge action only. I mean, of course, it can also be influenced by changing the fermion action, but. So it's just an interplay between the two. Now, finally, Mark. This is somehow going to the dBW2 action makes this first order phase transition smaller, so to say, closer to a point, which means that it has a better effective potential. So this is something like optimizing the effective potential. And of course, the optimum, really optimum situation would be The one which I already showed several times, that this one, if this one. Now, of course, you can say this is just a model. So now the question is whether there is, maybe there is, if you have a very, very small region which is singular, is already quite close to the optimal situation. So one could, now for instance, somebody comes, I don't know who, somebody comes and tell me he has an action which has an Aoki phase. I mean, we have a first order phase transition. Then what we should do, we just would connect the two actions in a parameter space with a linear line, and according to the continuity, there somewhere in the middle there should be approximately C2 equals 0. Yes? And this would be the optimal action from the point of view of the effective potential, which would then be very close to chiral symmetric. Of course, there will be still chiral symmetry breaking corrections in the derivative terms of the effective action. So this would not be an exact chiral symmetry, it would just be chiral symmetry in the effective potential. So that's, yes. Yeah.